It's Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, and coming up in this hour, Radio Westerns. Later on, a great-sounding broadcast of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. But first, Jimmy Stewart stars as the six-shooter. This broadcast first heard on September 27, 1953, on NBC.
James Stewart as the six-shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. The NBC radio network presents James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered to the Western Territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
The post office at Yellowcrest was in Jim Pincher's general store. Oh, it was just a piece of planking and some wooden cubby holes over the one side between the soda cracker barrel and the jugs of apple cider. And when the store was crowded, you couldn't expect to get much mail service, but you couldn't blame Jim for that. It's just like he said, he made his profit on selling groceries and staples, and the post office was just sort of a convenience for the folks in town. Well, anyway, I'd been out on the range about 3-4 months, so I thought maybe a letter might be turning up. Not that I was expecting to hear it from anybody in particular, but, oh, well, it's about my time to get some mail. I usually receive about 3 letters a year, or 4, or maybe some years. But that's not counting the catalogs either. That's just a letter.
Nope, I'm sorry, Britt. It just ain't got a thing for you.
Well, I thought I might as well make sure while I was in town.
Sure. I'm real glad you dropped by. How are things with the Foster outfit?
First right, Jim. First right.
Well, maybe by the time the roundup's over, I'll have some mail for you. Deliveries are usually a little heavier then. Why, one day last September, I got in 6 letters.
No.
It's the truth, so help me. 6 letters. And it was all for the people right here in Yellow Crest. Oh, treat yourself to some of them Concord grapes there, Britt. They're real sweet and juicy.
Oh, thanks, Jim. Much obliged. Well, I... Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, these are good.
They're the best I've seen in a long time. Oh, well, ladies are fixing preserves. That's why my wife's always... Well, she's already on about... Oh.
The woman who just come in was tall, kind of gray-haired. Deep frown wrinkles in her forehead, big blue saucer eyes. They had black circles all around her. She didn't look my way. As a matter of fact, she didn't seem to be looking anywhere. She just stared straight ahead and resting the palms of her hands against the mail counter.
I'd like my mail, please.
No mail.
You sure?
No mail, I said.
Well, there must be something by now. Maybe you didn't look and...
Say, Britt, did I show you the new supply of holsters I got in? Come on over here where you can get a good look at them. Not that they're fancy enough for that revolver of yours, but they're sure pretty. Good quality, too. They...
Hey, just what's going on here, Jim?
Hmm?
Well, that lady was in here. You treat her like she had the plague or something.
You mean you didn't recognize her, Britt?
No, I can't say she's dead.
Helen Bricker. Strad Bricker's girl.
Helen Bricker? Why, that's not...
Guess we ought to be calling her Mrs. Billy Stark, but right?
Yeah. Well, excuse me, Jim. I want to see if I can catch up with her. Thanks for the grace.
Now, wait a minute, Britt. The folks in Yellowcrest don't like the ID.
Hey, Helen. Helen, hold up a second here.
Hey, what's the matter with you, Helen? You getting stuck up or something?
Stuck up?
Well, you remember me, don't you?
Sure. I remember you, Britt.
Well, but back there in the store, you didn't so much as give me a nod.
I didn't hear you falling all over yourself with good mornings either.
Uh-huh. Well, to tell you the truth, I just didn't recognize you. Not right off the bat. Not that you've changed very much or anything, but, well, it's been quite a spell.
Your mouth is the wrong shape for lion, Britt. You couldn't fool a horse fly.
Well, I don't know what you mean, Helen.
So I haven't changed, have I? Gray hairs, wrinkles so deep you can feel the bones behind them.
Yeah, well, maybe your hair is sort of lightened up here and there, but that doesn't...
Britt, I'm an old woman. I was 27 last April. But I'm an old woman.
Oh, now, Helen.
Well, here's my buckboard. Goodbye, Britt. Thanks for speaking to me.
Thanks for speaking to... What the Sam Hill do you mean, Helen?
Hadn't you heard? The good citizens of Yellow Crest don't waste their words on Billy Stark's wife. They're not going to like the idea of you walking down the street with me, neither.
Oh, now you're doing a little exaggerating, Helen.
Am I?
Well, now, where are you living now?
Cabin out the end of town by South Creek. The one my father built when I was a girl, remember?
Oh, sure, sure. By the way, how is Strad?
I don't know. I haven't seen him since I come to Yellow Crest last month.
Oh?
He sent word I could have the cabin. Nobody's living there anyhow. But I wasn't to come near our house or try to get in touch with him. Not for as long as I live. Get up, Sarah Jean.
Well, seeing it's almost noon, I thought I might as well wander over to the hotel and have some dinner. I was just passing Sheriff Ritter's office when I got the doggone this pain in the right foot. Wow. Gee, wait, for a minute, I thought I'd broken something. Every time I put my weight down on it, it was just like somebody was driving a spike up in it. Oh. Well, Pete's sake, why didn't I think of that before? It was a spike. Yeah, that's what was poking up through my heel. It was a spike.
Something the matter, Britt?
Huh? Oh, Bud. I reckon my boot needs a little repairing.
Better take it over to Seth Jenkins. He'll take care of it.
Yeah, I guess I had. Say. Hey, where'd that star on your chest come from? What, you taking over for Sheriff Ritter or something?
Temporary, Britt. Yes, sir. He's gone over to Salt Center for a few days, visiting some relatives from back east. Left me his deputy while he's gone.
Nice, say. Oh, nice bumping into you.
Yeah. Britt.
Yeah?
Wasn't you just talking to Helen Bricker over by the general store?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We'd appreciate it if you didn't act too friendly towards her.
Oh?
She shouldn't have come back here in the first place. She must have known how the town feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Because of her being married to...
Why, sure, Britt. You don't blame us, do you?
I
know she was young when she run off with him, and he hadn't turned into an out-and-out killer yet, but she didn't have to stick with him, did she? Why, even after he robbed the bank right here in her own hometown and killed Dave Fletcher, she still didn't make a move towards leaving him. Leastways, they was together when the marshal captured him a couple of months later.
Well, I did hear about Star being arrested, but I didn't get too many of the details.
Well, over at Junction City. They'd been living there on and off, using another name, of course, and pretending to be real respectable.
That's all.
Yeah, but somebody tipped off Marshal Shaw, one of Billy's own boys, probably. And the marshal took him without firing a shot. He's up at Fort Bryan now, and if you ask me, she ought to be there, too, waiting to be hung right along with him.
Well, when's the hanging supposed to take place?
This week sometime. The day ain't certain. Leastways, we ain't had word from Fort Bryan yet.
I see.
Doggone it, Britt. Dave Fletcher was a fine man. Why, if it hadn't been for him and his bank, like as not, there wouldn't even be a town here.
Yeah, that's true enough.
Every time I see Helen riding around with her head up in the air, it just galls me. Why, even her own father won't have nothing to do with her. A guy like that married to a fellow who's murdered 10, 12 men, maybe. Nobody knows how many for sure. And yet she'd come back here as big as life, as if she owned a place, not asking anybody's by her leave.
Well, Yellow Crest's her hometown, you know. I guess she's got a right to stay here if she wants to. There's not much anybody can do about that.
Maybe there ain't. Maybe there is.
Uh-huh. Hey, what?
Hmm?
Look at that. Who in the thunder stirring up all that dust? He sure must be in a hurry. Look at him.
Yeah, look. Oh. Looks like Tim Slater. Well, if it is, he's just back from Fort Bryant. Yeah. It's Tim, all right. Tim, what's the news?
They're stringing him up tonight, Buck. Official.
Well, what time?
11 o'clock. He was already testing the gallows when I left.
Hmm? Well, there you are.
Yeah. Well, Guess I better see to having this boot fixed. So long, Buck.
Who put this heel on just did not know his trade. No reason why a nail should come through the inside if the heel's been put on proper. Who made these boots for you anyway, Britt?
Well, let's see now. Let's come to think of it. I believe you did.
Hmm?
Well, didn't you?
You know darn well I didn't. You think I can't recognize my own work?
Well, I don't
know. Why, I never turned out a pair of boots like this even when I was apprenticed. Now, tell me the truth. Where'd you get them?
The general store over at White Corner.
I thought so. Yes, sir, I thought so.
Mm-hmm.
Ready-made, that's what they are. Well, I could tell the second I seen them. No wonder you got a nail in your foot. The idea. Britt Ponsett wearing ready-made boots.
Well, you know, sometimes it's very hard to find a good bootmaker.
Well, I'm here, ain't I? Been here over 15 years.
All right, Seth. The next pair I get, you can make them for me. How's that?
People had learned better than to put their crust in machines. Here. See how this feels now.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. No. Oh, looks like I got a hole in my sock.
Well, sir, that don't come as any surprise to me. Never run into a cowpoke yet who didn't have a hole in his stocking. Go on, stand on it.
Oh, all right.
Jump up and down.
What do you mean?
Go ahead, jump up and down.
All right.
Yeah. Don't feel a thing, do you?
No, I think.
Took a human being to get that heel on right, not no machine.
You're right, Seth. You're right. All right. Oh, that's fine. What do I owe you?
Yeah. I ought to charge you double for having to work on ready-made, but since you give me your word you'll order your next pair from me, why, I'll stick my regular price at 10 cents.
More than worth it. Here you are.
Thank you. Yeah. Gonna be quite a doings tonight, I reckon.
How's that?
Tim Slater come by with the news just before you dropped in.
You mean about Billy Stark?
Yeah. We're meeting at Buck Thompson's house, but I don't suppose you want to get mixed up in it, Britt.
Mixed up in what, sir?
Why, running that wife of Billy's out of town. You knew about it, didn't you? Tim said he seen you talking to Buck.
Yeah, I was talking to him, all right.
Well, didn't he tell you how we're gonna show Helen Bricker, Helen Stark, that she ain't exactly welcome to stay in Yellowcrest?
No, I guess he didn't think I'd be interested.
We've been waiting until we were sure about that hanging. Figured we'd get rid of one Stark while the state's getting rid of the other one.
Mm-hmm. Helen isn't going to be very easy to convince.
Burning that cabin where she's staying ought to do the trick.
What?
I reckon she won't have much choice after that. And seeing as how her own father won't let her live with him, I imagine she might have a little trouble finding somebody else to take her in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for fixing my boots, Seth. Feels just like new.
It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I got out to Strad Bricker's house. It's a big, comfortable two-story place on 2nd Street. Green shutters. Front porch painted kind of gray shade. The two white cast iron deer standing out in the front lawn. One a little smaller than the other.
Yes? Oh, hello, Britt.
Hello, Strad. Mind if I come in?
No, of course not.
Strad was a big man. A couple inches over 6 feet. Must have weighed, 230, I suppose. None of it was fat, either. Hair was white as snow. And a thick brush mustache and fell down over his upper lip. He didn't look old, though, not for his years. Not unless you happened to get a glimpse of his eyes. And they were sort of dull and faded. They didn't jump all around the room the way they did the last time I saw him.
I heard you were in Yellowcrest, Britt. Jim Pincher was telling me down the store.
Yeah, I stopped by to see if there's any mail.
Sit down.
Thanks. You're looking well, Strad. Real well.
I stay about the same. What can I do for you, Britt?
I ran into Helen this morning. She sure has changed a lot, hasn't she, Strad?
Not so.
You haven't seen her yourself?
No.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems kind of funny. You both live in the same town.
Brett, if you come to try and fix things up between us, you're wasting your time.
Oh, no. No, no. It's none of my business. I know that.
I told her he was no good before she married him, I told her. But she knew more than anybody else. She wouldn't listen to me.
Well, I guess sometimes it's pretty hard to see a person's faults when you're in love with them.
That ain't my concern.
Oh, it must be pretty hard on Helen. Everybody blaming her for what her husband did, not even willing to give her the time of day when they meet her on the street.
If she don't like it, she's free to leave.
No, she wasn't complaining, Strad. I don't think I ever heard a bricker complain my whole life.
She ain't a bricker. She's Billy Stark's wife.
Well, anyway, about her leaving town, it may be that she won't have much choice about the matter. Billy Stark's being hung at 11 o'clock tonight, and some of the boys are planning to burn Helen out at the same time.
They already told me about it, Britt.
They told you? What are you... You're not going to try and stop them?
That cabin on South Creek ain't worth worrying about.
Well, Helen isn't worth worrying about either, huh? Is that it?
There probably won't be any violence. If there is, it's the sheriff's job to prevent it.
Oh, now, Sheriff Ritter's out of town. You know that. If he was here, he wouldn't let those fellows get near that cabin.
He's left a deputy.
Buck Thompson's one of the gang that's fixing to do the burning.
She don't belong to Yellow Crest. This ain't her home. Not anymore. Let her go someplace else. If she needs money, all she has to do is send word to me.
Why, she'd never take money from you, Strad.
Then let her say she was wrong. Let her come to me and say she's sorry she ever laid eyes on Billy Stark. Let her ask me to forgive her. Maybe then I'll care what happens to her. Maybe then I'll care.
You're wasting your time, Britt. No matter what anybody says, no matter what they try to do, I'm not leaving Yellowcrest.
Well, with Sheriff Ritter away, there's no lawman here to protect you, Helen.
I can protect myself. It's after 10, Britt. You better get out before they come.
Well, all right.
Britt.
Huh?
Don't worry about me. I'll be all right. I got a Winchester rifle, and I know how to use it.
Now, look, Helen.
I'll kill the first person who comes near this cabin. I mean it, Britt.
Oh, you couldn't kill anybody.
Couldn't I? I'm Billy Stark's wife, remember?
I remember. Sure, I remember. And there's a chance Yellow Crest might forget it someday, but if there's any gunplay here tonight, they never will.
I don't expect him to forget. I married Billy. Nobody forced me to. And I don't expect no favors now.
Hmm. Well, all right, good night. Ah, yeah, it looks like they're bringing torches.
I told you to leave before they got here.
Now, you just let that rifle stay where it is, Helen. You can get out the back way, and I'll stall them off.
I never thought I'd hear Britt Ponsett advise nobody to run from a fight.
You never saw me walk right into one, did you?
Mrs. Stark, we'll give you just 2 minutes to get out of that cabin.
I'm giving you less than that to get off my property.
This here property belongs to Strad Brigger. Ain't yours. You're no Brigger anymore.
I'll show you who I am.
Let go, Britt. Briggs.
Now, you're so set on staying inside here. Now, you stay.
You got one more minute?
I don't want you taking my part, Britt.
That's those crazy fools out there I'm worried about, not you.
Now, if here's your last chance. Okay, boys, bring up that target. That cabin ought to be dry enough to make a real warm fire.
You're right about that, Buck.
What are you doing out here, Britt?
Now, you better be careful about how you hold that torch, Jim.
What's the matter? You afraid he'll set something on fire?
Come on, Britt. Now, you just get out of the way. This ain't none of your concern.
I got a horse stabled in this town, and he concerns me.
A horse? What are you talking about?
You got a loco, Britt?
You start a fire here tonight, and like as not, you'll burn down the whole town.
He's loco, all right. The wind's from the wrong direction.
Now, wait a minute now. Maybe Punch is right.
Oh, shut up, Jim.
Now, listen, this wind can change any time. Sometimes it changes real fast with a quick blow up like this.
Yeah.
And it might start raining, too. Then the fire would go out.
Yeah.
Come on, boys.
Yeah, come on, don't let him bug.
Now, hold on. I said I was concerned about my horse, Buck. I wouldn't want anything to happen to my horse because of you.
You threatening me?
Now, hold on a minute, Buck. We don't want no serious trouble out here.
Now, just take it easy, both of you.
Look here, I'm the deputy sheriff, Britt. You pull a gun on me and I'll throw you in jail.
It's not against the law to carry a rifle, is it?
I'd feel better if you put it down. Drop it.
Buck.
We're not here, boy.
Britt. I mean business.
Hey, wait. Not here, fella. Wait. You feel that wind now?
Yeah. Yeah, it's changing. Huh? It's swinging around.
It'll be coming from the south.
It will not.
You're imagining things.
Imagination, nothing. Get them torches buried, boys, while they're still.
Now, wait a minute. You listen to me.
No, my house is just down the hill from here. I'm not going to have it burned out.
Well, Buck, you still want me to drop the rifle?
You just remember one thing, Britt. There'll be other nights when there ain't no wind.
I reckon there will, Buck. I reckon there will. Well, you'll have to get this window fixed, Helen. New pane of glass and some putty. That's about all you'll need.
It don't matter, Britt. Fixing it's probably a waste of time anyhow.
Oh?
I heard what Buck said. About there being other nights. He was right.
Oh, I don't know. You can get folks all worked up about something once, maybe, but they usually come around to their senses before they go off half-cocked again. Besides, when Sheriff Ritter gets back to town, he'll keep things under control. The hands of the clock had touched 11. 11 o'clock meant that Billy Stark, well, that's the time they'd set. I didn't know what Helen would do, how she'd take it, but I sure didn't expect her to get a kind of a relaxed expression on her face. Why, she looked almost like she was relieved to know that it was over.
Ten years I was married to Billy. 10 years is a long time, Britt.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why'd you stick it out, Helen? You couldn't have gone on loving him after you found out what he was after he turned outlaw.
Love him? Every minute of the day, every day of the year, I hated Billy Stark.
Well, if you felt that way...
I made a bargain. Of my own free will. Oh, he was wild when I married him, but I thought he'd settle down. Lots of young fellas is wild, Britt.
Yeah?
Dad told me I'd regret it. Said I'd be sorry all the rest of my life. Said it so often. Well, maybe that's one of the reasons I just went ahead. Just to spite him. And afterwards, when Billy became a killer... I just couldn't come crawling back and admit that Dad had been right. I don't know why. I just couldn't.
Uh-huh.
Besides, I knew that someday they'd get Billy. Another outlaw would come along. A marshal. Or he'd pick the wrong gunfight. It was bound to happen. Someday they'd get him even if I had...
If you had to what?
Nothing, Britt, nothing.
Well, I'll be doggone. So you're the one that tipped them off, huh? It wasn't one of Billy's gang, it was you.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, no, you said I wasn't much good at lying, Helen. Well, you're just no good at all at it.
You're wrong, Britt, you're dead wrong.
I am, huh?
All right. I'll admit it to you. I was the one. But you gotta promise me you won't tell nobody.
Well, you're afraid of Billy's friends, ain't it?
Friends? Billy didn't have any.
Yeah, well, then why don't you want folks to find out what you did? They'd change their whole attitude towards you. Your father, think of him. Well, you'd feel entirely different.
It's my life, Britt. It don't concern nobody else. Not even Dad. That's the way I was brought up. That's the way Strad Bricker brought me up. And I'm his daughter. I'm Helen Bricker.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you are. Well, I haven't been back to Yellow Crash, not for, well, 5-6 months. So I don't know whether Helen is still living out in that cabin, still holding to herself, or whether the folks have kind of softened to her by now. Of course, it's possible that somebody told him about her and Billy, about what she did to have him captured and so on, but I haven't mentioned it, but, you know, it's pretty hard to keep a secret like that. Anyway, like I said, I don't know what's happened to Helen Bricker. Not for sure.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Lillian Baeff, Ken Christie, Herb Bygren, Parley Bear, and Will Wright. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. John Wall speaking.
The Six Shooter, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 27th, 1953 on NBC, only the second broadcast in that short-lived series on the network. It turns out that they couldn't pick up a sponsor in the days where television was really heating up. The only company to approach Stewart and the program was Chesterfield Cigarettes, but Stewart was against the idea of having a tobacco sponsorship, so the program closed in mid-1954. And this is an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday with your host, Mark Levonier. Now on to Luke Slaughter of Tombstone from April 20th, 1958 on CBS. This Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast called Henry Fell.
Slaughter's my name, Luke Slaughter. Cattle's my business. It's a tough business. It's big business. I've got a big stake in it. And there's no man west of the Rio Grande big enough to take it from me.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman. Across the territory from Yuma to Fort Defiance, from Flagstaff to the Huachucas, and below the border through Chihuahua and Sonora, his name was respected or feared, depending on which side of the law you were on. Man of vision, man of legend, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Folks who write dictionaries must have a pretty tough time with the word tolerance. I guess if you had to boil it down to just one other word, maybe it'd be understanding. Some of us here in Tombstone found that out when I gave Chief Margano and a few of his Apache braves the loan of a couple of sections of my spread to try their hand at cattle raising. And I got chewed out plenty about it every time I went into town.
Well, you call it an experiment, Slaughter. I call it an invitation to those sneaking Apaches to murder you.
Well, they're living on my spread. Don't you figure it's my business?
Well, they won't stop with you. Once they smell white blood again, they'll massacre everybody in Tombstone.
Look, Mr. Vail, Margano's through making war. He's trying to understand our ways. He's even trying to get his people to adopt some of them.
Well, they adopted guns quick enough, but they'll never be cattlemen.
This was their country before it was ours. They've got a right to be part of its progress. You can't just shut the Apaches up on a reservation and forget them.
No, maybe we can't forget them. But if we drive them back to the Chiricahuas, we'll at least have some warning when they strike.
They aren't going to strike. Margano and I have sort of a, well, sort of a private treaty.
Margano's a senile old fool. You got a private treaty with that trigger-tempered son of his?
Lasher? I like him, too. He's intelligent and he's got spunk.
Spunk my foot.
Luke, I've been looking all over for you. I want you to make the acquaintance of Mr. Henry Fell from back east. Fell, this here's Luke Slaughter, my boss. And this here's Carter Vail, another big man in these parts.
Howdy.
A distinct pleasure, gentlemen. Indeed it is.
So, you're from back east, Mr. Fell.
Yes, indeed. Boston.
You know, boys, Mr. Fell here can outdraw any man in the place. Well, he can, by golly. Yes, sir. I bet a month's wages he can even outdraw you, Luke.
I'm afraid neither Mr. Fell nor myself have any special reason for drawing.
Well, he's got plenty of reason. Oh, not necessarily against you, of course. He'll take on all comers.
You think you could outdraw me, Fell?
I have very little doubt of it, Mr. Vail.
With what? You aren't even packing an iron.
Well, you want to take him on, Mr. Vail? Why, he'll even furnish the weapons.
Let's just forget about it, gentlemen.
Forget it, nothing. Fell may as well learn some of the facts of life in the Arizona Territory.
Exactly what I came to do, Mr. Vail, to learn them and record them for posterity.
All right. I doubt that you'll ever record this incident, but you can start by trying to outdraw me.
With Mr. Fell's weapons?
Yep.
Hold on. Why spill blood over a silly barroom challenge?
Now, you've been implying that I shouldn't mix in your business, Slaughter. Well, this is mine.
Well, correct. Now, Mr. Vail thinks he can outdraw Mr. Fell. I and Mr. Fell don't think he can. And the loser buys a round for the house.
Splendid. I don't indulge, but I shall be delighted to stand treat if I lose.
Why, you ridiculous little dude. All right, let's see the gun.
I'm unwrapping the weapons. Nobody mentioned guns. You draw with these, Vail, and here's yours, Fell.
Paper and a piece of charcoal. What is this?
Why, an outdrawn match. One, two, three, draw.
We should have both been wise to Wichita Vail. He's got a sense of humor like a cow buffalo.
Watch Mr. Vail, Luke. Ain't he the cleverest?
Nose flaring, lips tight, chin craggy, powerful.
Hey, wait a minute. Is that supposed
to be... Well, hurry up and draw something, Vail. He's almost done.
Come on, Vail. I'll be doggone, Vail. It's a spitting image of you.
There we are.
Yeah. Well, looks like you're stuck for the drinks, Mr. Vail.
Well, now look here. When a man challenges me to... if anybody thinks this is a laughing matter...
Well, now, there is no offense intended, sir. You are more than welcome to the little sketch, and I shall be delighted to purchase the libation.
I don't welch for bets. Frank, set him up for the house.
Come on, boy!
You're a good sport, Vail. And it's mighty good likeness, too.
Well, I guess I will take the picture home with me, Fell. Mrs. Vail is, well, women sometimes enjoy a doodad like this.
Luke, you know what Mr. Fell's doing here in Tombstone?
Yeah, keeping you in free drinks.
No, sir, he's... well, that too. But he come west to paint engines.
Yeah, well, the engines do their own painting with war paint. Slaughter and I were just talking about that.
We weren't getting anywhere either.
War paint? I understood that the treaties with the Apaches were working out nicely.
They are, when the white men live up to them.
Well, that is practically treason against your own race, Slaughter.
If it's treason to compare some members of my own race with Indians like Cochise and Margano, well, I'm guilty. Tell us a little more about what you plan to do, Mr. Fell.
Well, I want to paint the strong Indian faces, their customs, the way they live. The people back east have some amazing misconceptions about them.
Yes, so has Slaughter. He trusts them.
I'm trying to understand them. Anyway, Mr. Fell, there are some very interesting and colorful Apaches living on my spread. You'll have models for all the painting you want to do.
And the Apaches will have a brand new candidate for buzzard bait.
This here's powerful hard work, Luke.
Well, I know you don't feel right out of a saddle, Wichita, but we're going to need this corral.
Oh, there, Red.
Ah, good morning, Vale.
Morning, Slaughter. Wichita.
Howdy. How'd the missus like your picture?
Well, she wants your friend Fell to paint one of her. You know where I can find him?
I'm afraid he isn't available today. I took him out to the Apache camp at sunrise, loaded with paints and brushes and canvas.
He was happy as a chipmunk in a pinion forest.
Slaughter, a tenderfoot like Fell could be just the fuse to set your Apaches off. Suppose he tries to paint one of their women.
Chief Margano explained about that to him. He said, a woman who gazes too long at a reflection in a clear stream forgets her life's purpose.
Them Apaches got the right idea about their women, folk. I ought to marry one and make her hammer this corral together.
What are you building the corral for, Slaughter? So Margano won't steal your Mustangs?
Well, for once, you came sort of close to trapping me. I'm going to try to improve the range Mustangs with some Morgan breeding stock. I figure there's no use tempting Lasha and his young buck friends way beyond their conception of our property laws.
You and your fancy talk about your Apache friends. You don't trust them any more than I do.
Sure I do. I just don't expect them to understand a whole new code of ethics overnight.
Hey, somebody's sure pounding a lot of leather.
Yeah, it's us. Look, Wichita, it's Fell on that little roan we left out there for him.
Well, I never thought a dude like him could ride. Slaughter, he's in trouble.
Whoa! I got him. Steady. Oh, steady. Wichita, help him off.
Sure, sure. Wait, Mr. Fell, what happened? Your clothes is ripped. That mare's lathered up like you was going to shave her.
That's all right, I guess. I saved most of my paints on this canvas. Mr. Slaughter, those Indians are far from friendly.
What?
They set upon me. The one you call Lasher and another red-skinned blackguard.
I told you they'd do it, Slaughter. They'll be coming after us if we don't go after them first.
Hold it, Vale. Let's find out what started the trouble.
Nothing I did, I assure you. I was painting a portrait of the old chief with his permission. Lasher and this other young buck came up and he took one look and knocked me to the ground.
Well, how'd you get away?
Well, for the moment, the old man seemed as surprised as I was. This Lasher rushed to him, started to jabber in what I assume was Apache, and I wrenched loose, grabbed what I could, and somehow mounted this horse. Fortunately, the Indians' horses were still hobbled.
The miserable, sneaking cowards tried to murder you in cold blood.
Don't be too sure. Maybe this was Lasher's idea of a prank.
Oh, I doubt that. Lasher's friend, who I eluded with the aid of an elbow to his Adam's apple, was holding a knife to my throat at the same time.
Hey, that is a nasty cut on your arm.
Well, that was a nasty knife.
You'll have to take care of that wound right away. Is the picture you were painting?
Yes, it's a bit the worse for wear, but I can repaint the smears.
Well, that's Margano's profile, all right. Except you made him look almost decent. All right, Slaughter. I'll head for Tombstone and get the men together.
What for?
What for? To drive those Apaches back to the Chiricahuas. There's any left when we finish with them.
This happened on my property. As soon as I get Fell fixed up, I'll ride out and get the whole story.
A white man has been attacked. It doesn't matter whose property it happened on. It's a matter of defending the community now.
You listen to me, Vale. You fire a shot or even go near Marcano.
Dig sand, men. It's an engineer.
Get that stack of rails. Crawl for it.
Up there on the rise, a mounted Apache.
Vale, don't fire.
Try and stop me.
You have to. Go. Keep his gun for him, Wichita.
Oh.
Lasher.
Captain Slaughter.
Have you gone loco?
I've come from White Eyes Picture Maker. I will not harm you.
Are you alone?
I am alone.
Then drop that bow and ride to me.
Send White Eyes Fell to me. He is our enemy.
Enemy?
Lasha, either parley like a man or send your father.
I warn you, Hustin Slaughter. Turn Fell loose or I will come back with my braves and take him.
I wouldn't try that.
I give you until the sun is at its highest. Then we'll come back for the White Eyes.
We only got till noon, Luke. There's 20 braves in the camp, and plenty of them got rifles.
Vale could round up more men than that. But I'm not going to let this turn into war.
Luke, did you ever stop to think that maybe you could be wrong about Injuns?
In a moment, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone returns. This is Bud Sewell with official results on the automobile competition the whole industry watches every year, the famous Mobile Gas Economy Run. This year's run, 1,883 miles from Los Angeles to Texas, ranging from sea level through mountain passes. And once again, Chrysler Corporation cars took the lion's share of firsts. Plymouth, Chrysler, and Imperial, again this year for the second straight year, winning first place over all other cars in their class in the famous Economy Run. Imperial, by the way, was sweepstakes winner too, getting 62.7188 ton miles per gallon. The forward look is a lot more than look. You get a better engine, brawnier brakes, torsion air ride at no extra cost, and winning performance and economy in cars of the forward look from Chrysler Corporation. Take a drive this week in a car of the forward look, Plymouth, Dodge, DeSoto, Chrysler, or the triumphant Imperial. Drive one of America's performance winners from Chrysler Corporation. And now, Act Two of William N. Robeson's production of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Carter Vale came to in a fury. He swore to drive the Apaches back to the mountains. He swore he'd settle with me after he'd done it. Then he mounted his big stallion and spurred back toward Tombstone to recruit men and guns.
Luke, he's mad enough to eat the devil with his horns on. And I ain't so sure he ain't got a case.
He will have, if Lasher brings his braves back to take Fell.
If I had incited those Indians, I'd tell you, Mr. Slaughter, but I assure you I was attacked without provocation.
Let me see your painting of Chief Margano again, Fell.
Whatever you're gonna do, Luke, do it pronto.
This is good. You've captured the strength of his profile, the courage in his eye.
This ain't no time to act like one of them art critic dudes. We're 2 hours away from being caught in a war.
I once saw the funeral rites for an old chief of the Chitimacha tribe in the Louisiana Territory. His son was very much concerned about the way the body was laid out on the funeral pyre, so that when the dead warrior met the Great Spirit... Fell, could you make another portrait of Margano from memory, posed as I tell you?
Certainly. I have his features fixed in my mind. I wouldn't need a model.
Let's go up to the house, then. You've got a picture to paint. Fell painted a new picture of Margano. We rode for the Apache camp a little before noon. The picture was a gamble, but I had to force a parley or deal with a possible massacre.
What if they ambush us?
They won't. But you can bet that the Apache scouts are escorting us in.
I certainly don't see them.
An Apache could hide behind one of your paintbrushes.
I wish you'd explain this picture folder all to me.
We will, if it turns out I'm right.
And if you ain't?
Then we're all in a game of showdown for mighty big stakes. Now pull down to a walk now. The camp's just the other side of this wash. Easy now, both of you. Don't let the welcoming committee scare you into a false move.
What welcoming committee? I don't see no... Uh-oh. Right out of the mesquite.
Oh, boy.
Margano and Lasha, wait. White Eyes, come with me.
We're all coming.
That's the buck who slashed me, Mr. Slaughter.
Don't worry. He's acting under Margano's orders now.
It appears like we beat Vale here anyhow.
Not by much. See that Indian riding up to the edge of the mesa?
Yeah. He's telling Lasha and old Margano something in sign language.
White riders coming. Bound to be Vale and the men.
Did anyone ever surprise an Apache?
Never twice.
Plenty far now.
Whoa. Who are they? Dismount, men. Get your time. Unbuckle your belt and let your guns drop, like I'm doing.
But you...
Do it. Margano, we come in peace.
What of the others who ride toward us?
I want this young brave in Wichita to ride out and meet them with a white flag. We'll use your shirt for that, Fell.
I gotta surrender without even my gun?
My chief!
Get started, Wichita. And make sure that Vale's men walk their horses into this camp.
Sure. All right, Luke.
Now, Margano, Lasher, suppose you meet us halfway.
We want no parley. Give us white eyes without a shirt.
Lasher, you insult me when you insult my friend. Now walk towards us, both of you.
Lasher will avenge his father.
Avenge him for what? Your father is just as I saw him this morning.
My son says, little man who draws with colored stick, tell lies to Great Spirit about Margano.
Your son is wrong.
I do not tell lies.
You speak with a tongue that has no wisdom. You strike out like a child who can't reason.
I am a man. I have killed Zuni warriors and Yaqui warriors. I have told my son that killing can no longer be the way of the Apache. He replies that even white men kill to avenge a wrong.
The wise white man and the wise red man make sure a wrong has been done before they kill. Nothing should be decided in the heat of anger.
We've parley too long. White picture maker tell lies to Great Spirit.
Order! You're handling this like a...
Hold it right there, Vale. Where are the rest of your men?
Where they can cover this place with their guns. If you crawled your way into a trap.
I explained that you sent out the white flag, Luke.
And don't ask me to drop my guns. I don't aim to die before I pump some lead myself.
We've been having a little talk about hotheads. And now that the place is crawling with them, Mr. Fell and I'll show you how wrong you all are. Margano.
Where?
Hustine Fell has a gift for you.
I am not softened by a gift from one who lies.
Fell does not lie. His gift is the rolled white cloth he carries. Give it to your Apache friend, Mr. Fell.
Do not touch it, my father.
Take it, Margano. It's your likeness. The likeness Hustine Fell had not yet finished when your son so stupidly attacked him.
No. No, do not look upon it.
All right, I'll make you look at it.
Oh, my own son has told...
Lasha, behold...
Aye? But this morning the picture had but one eye, but one ear, but half of a mouth.
I told you, Lasher. Hustine Fell had not finished. You think that a friend I brought to you would insult your Great Spirit and your father by drawing him with half a face when he has two eyes as piercing as the eagle's?
My people shall remember their chief as they see him here, as Hustine Fell has painted him. Lasha was a fool. I will go from my people and never return.
No, Lasha. Your father and your people need you. Today you've become wiser. The best thing now is to, well, just forget this foolish trouble. Well, now what are you doing?
Hustine Fell has no shirt. He will do Lasha an honor if he will accept Lasha's shirt of doeskin.
Why, I shall be very pleased.
And... you will make a picture of Lasha when there's no pain in your arm?
Oh, my arm feels fine, Lasha. I'd like to paint you, and I can assure Mr. Slaughter that I will not attempt another profile.
Profile? I do not understand.
It's nothing, Lasha. Just a word painters use. Now, Vale, suppose you let your army know the war is over.
As I turned toward Vale, Ponton, the other young Apache, was drawing his knife. I leaped for him. But Vale was off his horse in the same instant and hurling himself at me.
Slaughter, you fool! Mr. Vale, what'd you punch him for?
You think I want him to start a war? Might help him up, Wichita. Anton, you go ahead and throw your knife.
What? Well, Anton,
it is an evil knife. Evil spirits bewitched it. It harmed a friend. Anton hurls it from him.
You see, Luke, he wasn't aiming to harm nobody.
You claim to be such an expert on Apache customs, Slaughter, and an expert on hotheads. And now we're square for the punch you landed on me this morning. Right?
Right, Vale. I've been spouting about how tolerance and understanding are pretty much the same thing. I guess we both understand a little more about our neighbors. And if your jaw feels like mine... I guess from now on, we're going to be a lot more tolerant of each other.
Luke's Slaughter of Tombstone, starring Sam Buffington, was written by Fran Van Hartisfeldt, with editorial supervision by Tom Hanley, and directed by William N. Robeson. Supporting Mr. Buffington were Junius Matthews, Carl Swenson, Ben Wright, Don Diamond, and Jack Crucian. Music was composed and conducted by Amerigo Marino.
I couldn't sleep that night and nothing. My mother said, "What was the matter with you? It looks like something wrong." I said, "Nothing."
Nothing, he said. But there was something wrong. That night in the park, this boy and his juvenile gang had stabbed and beaten another teenager to death. The victim, Michael Farmer, son of a fireman.
He was a very courageous, spirited boy. He was athletic. He was an excellent student. And we had great plans for his future. It's a hard thing to realize that there is no future any longer.
For Michael Farmer's father, the future is blank. But for the rest of us, what implications does this crime hold? Tomorrow night, on most of these stations, CBS Radio's Unit 1 probes the causes and effects of the brutal New York gang murder for which four teenagers have just been tried and convicted. You'll hear gang members, police, parents, all probing for an understanding of the tragedy as Edward R. Murrow narrates Unit 1's penetrating study, Who Killed Michael Farmer? Tomorrow night.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from April 20th, 1958. Wrapping up this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.